This is our last Sunday before school kicks off, and the next Sunday we're actually launching into our Old Testament series, Epic Stories from the Old Testament, which I don't know about y'all, but I'm really excited about. I'm excited to dive in and to see Jesus all through the Old Testament, all these great stories we've heard about all our lives, or at least our church lives. We've heard about these stories, and we're going to look at them hopefully in a new light. But I'm excited about that kicking off next Sunday. So if you're planning on coming, being out of town, don't be out of town next Sunday, because we're going to be starting Old Testament. And bring a friend, bring somebody. So here we are. Last week, Cap covered missions. For those of you that are here and those of you who were not here, I really encourage you to go and listen to the podcast. It's a very powerful message about missions, and not just missions generally, but missions specifically to the unreached people groups of the world, to the ends of the earth, that's our call. Matthew 24:14, Revelation 5:9, Revelation 7:9, we see that all nations will be gathered around the throne. But I think it's funny that I get to stand up here with you this morning and talk about what we're going to talk about today. I talked to Sarah while I was out of town and asked how it went. It's like, how did it go last week? And she was like, oh, it was great. It was actually really awesome. But he just talked about, like, missions in the world. Like, he didn't talk about, like, living our lives for Christ, like, here. I'm like, well, that was planned, you know, because I'm going to cover that this week. So for those of you who were squirming in your seat last week because of the weightiness of our call to the nations, you're a little more local-minded, you can breathe today, because that's what we're going to be talking about, being locally-minded missions, kind of living our lives for the glory of God in our everyday life, here in Kingwood, Atascocita, Porter, the surrounding area. What does it look like to live on mission here? And I say it's funny that I'm covering this today, because here's the commissioning statement of the university that I got my bachelor's degree at. This is what the president of the university, when he founded the university, what he felt God called him to do with the university. He said, raise up your students to hear my voice, God's voice, to go where my light is dim, where my voice is heard small, where my healing power is not known, even to the uttermost bounds of the earth. That was the commissioning vision of the university that I got my bachelor's degree in missions at. And not only did I get a bachelor's degree in missions, my senior year I helped start a nonprofit organization, a short-term missions organization, whose sole call, like our theme verse was Matthew 24:14. That's what we were. We were like, we're going to the uttermost bounds of the earth. So I helped start that my senior year, and by God's grace, through that organization, I've had the privilege to help lead and organize trips to Indonesia, to Kenya, India, Iraq. I've personally myself been to Nepal, Ukraine, Guatemala, and multiple parts of Mexico, all on mission for Jesus. And I share all of this with you this morning because, not to talk about how great I am, because I'm not great at all, but I want you to know that what Cap talked about last week is my heart. It's what burns within me. It's the path that God set me on from the time he saved me, redeemed me, transformed me. He put this vision for missions in the uttermost bounds of the earth within me. And so listening to Cap's message last week, I'll be honest with you, when I listened to it, it stirred all this within me. And I have to pose the question to you. How do we listen to that and be the same? How do we hear what he talked about last week and our lives don't look any different? The answer is hopefully we don't. We don't live the same. Hopefully some of us hear that message and we are stirred. Hopefully the Spirit of God stirs within us a fiery passion to pack our lives up, to sell all we have, and to go to the uttermost bounds of the earth. Hopefully there's a stirring to see the redemption of the gospel of Jesus invade the nations, the unreached people groups. Hopefully at most that's what happened when we heard that. And if you're sitting in here and you heard Cap's message and you feel this call to the nations, talk to us. Come to me. Come to Patrick. Come to Cap. Come to Jeff. Talk to the elders. We want to pray with you to that end. We want to see you go to the ends of the earth if that's stirring within you. But if that's not, hopefully the bare minimum, the minimum that happened last week was there was a stirring within you to send people to the ends of the earth, to see people go, to do everything in your power to take part in that mission. This church, Christ Church Kingwood, does not just exist for Kingwood in Houston and the surrounding area. God's plan of redemption does not just exist for Kingwood. We're part of a global and eternal movement. We exist to see God's glory revealed among the nations, among the darkest, most unreached nations on this planet. That's our call as God's people. But this church still does exist for Kingwood. This church still does exist. The gospel message still does exist for this area, for this part of the world, because that's where we are. We're sitting here right now. And we can't forget that. I remember when I was a senior in college, I was wrestling with, like I said, I got a bachelor's degree, received a bachelor's degree in missions. So I'd been training, been doing all these missions classes. I'd been on mission trips. And so I get to my senior year and I'm wrestling with this. Where do I go? You know, like every great missionary, you know, where do you go? You're wrestling with that. And I had friends of mine that were in the missions department, and they're like, oh man, I got the call. I've heard God's voice to Antarctica or to the Eskimos or to, you know, whatever. Like the Iraq, I got to get to the, you know, these unreached people. They saw the faces and they had them printed on their walls, and I'm like, I don't have that. I don't feel this call to any specific nation. I don't know any other language. I kind of half know Spanish, but you know, I don't definitely want to go to Mexico, or I don't know. What's God calling me to? I have a degree in missions. Where do I go? And so I go to my missions professor and I sit down with him and I start just to like vomit this struggle to him. And he's sitting there and this guy, if y'all knew this guy, he's a guy that you don't say this stuff with to him. He's ex-military, like flew Apache helicopters, you know, like you don't say, hey, I'm struggling. You don't go to the guy. But I go to him and I pour my heart out and I say, listen, here I am, I'm struggling. And I share all this with him that I don't know where God's called me to, but all I really want to do is see people come to know Jesus. Like, I just want to see God move. I want to see people's hearts transformed by the gospel. And he looks at me in those piercing eyes and he's like, okay, just get straight. So all you really want to do is see people come to know Jesus. I said, yeah, I do. And he looks at me, and I'll never forget his words. He said, why don't you get up and walk across the street to Walmart? There's people right over there at Walmart that don't know Jesus. He said, Jeremy, getting on a plane does not make you a missionary. If you can't be a missionary here, you will never be a missionary there. Ever. So I sit there, convicted, wallowing in my pride, because I recognized in that moment that my heart for missions wasn't about the glory of God. It was about me. My heart to go to the ends of the earth was to get on a plane. I wanted to be on the plane. I wanted the adventure. I wanted to see cultures. I didn't really want people to know Jesus. You see, if we're not missionaries here and now, we'll never, ever be missionaries there and then. So my hope this morning is to translate Jesus' inescapable commission, as Cap put it last week, it's inescapable, to take that commission, to take our lives, to see the glory of God, go to the nations, and the lost people groups of this world. I want to try to take that this morning and translate it into our lives here. Because our vision here at Christ Church is to make disciples of Jesus who make other disciples of Jesus. We want to see disciple makers. And a disciple maker is nothing less than a missionary. I mean, nothing more than a missionary. To make disciples is to be a missionary. And a missionary is nothing more than sharing the gospel of Jesus in your cultural context. Where you live. Living life where you are, here and now, for the glory of God. That's a missionary. So, newsflash, on the screen behind me, it's not really on the screen behind me, but if it was, newsflash, you're a missionary. If you know Jesus in here this morning, if you're a follower, a disciple of Jesus, you're a missionary. Hate to break it to you. Don't have to get a degree in missions to do that. Don't have to hear a specific call to do that. You're a missionary. As long as you're here, you're a missionary here. You may be feeling a tug to the nations. You may have listened to Cap's message last week and said, man, we've got to go. I've got to go. But as long as you're here, you're a missionary here. I want to look at two passages of Scripture this morning. Jeremiah, first one, Jeremiah 29, verses 4 through 7. Jeremiah 29, 4 through 7 says this, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses and live in them, plant gardens and eat their produce, take wives and have sons and daughters, take wives for your sons, and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters, multiply there. And do not decrease, but seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare." What we have here is a letter from Jeremiah, God speaking through Jeremiah, to the people of God who have been exiled. They've been taken from their nation, from their country, to Babylon by King Nebuchadnezzar. They were forced out of their homes in Jerusalem, and now they live in Babylon. Now, I know some of you in here probably feel like you've been exiled to Kingwood. It's not your first choice. I'm one of them. Just kidding. Yes, not really. You feel like, for whatever reason, your job, family members, some other thing, you're here. This wouldn't be your first choice. You would probably choose the hill country where the rivers are crystal clear and not muddy, or something like that, or Boston, or, you know, somewhere where it's cooler, right? Some of you, this is all you've known. You're like, this is normal. This is home. For whatever reason, you're here because God has brought you here. Look at what it says here. Who sent them into exile? Not King Nebuchadnezzar. Not the Babylonian army. God. God himself sent them into exile. They are where they are because of God. You are where you are because of God. You're here in this place. I'm here in this place for the glory of God in the nations. Our lives here are for the glory of God. And look at what God tells them. In this place where they may not want to be, in this place that's far away from their usual home, look what God tells them. Does he tell him, hey, don't worry, I'll be there to pick you up soon. We're going back home. No. He says, live there. Live in such a way that the city in which you live benefits from you being there. Seek the welfare of the city. Love the people there. Pray for the people there. Engage the people there. Seek God on behalf of the people there. For when we engage in this way, when we live our lives in this way, the city in which we live, it will be blessed. It will be benefited. We live our lives for the glory of God where we are, and we seek God on behalf of where we are, the people where we are. The city will know. So our call is to engage where we are with the people around us, seeking God for their good. We aren't true missionaries or disciple makers if we do not engage with the people among whom we live. True missionaries engage in the context, the culture, the city in which they live, and they do it in such a way that it would prosper those people. It would benefit those people. It would impact those people. Now look at another passage in the New Testament. 1 Peter 2:11-12. The great apostle Peter says to people who are dispersed, which we'll see here, he says, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation." Here we have it again, New Testament version. Sojourners and exiles. These people were dispersed among the Gentiles. They were in a place that was not their normal home. They were around people that were not their normal people. And Peter writes to them, and what does he say? Again, does he say, "Hey, don't worry, God's going to bring you back"? No, he says, live there in such a way that God gets glory. He tells them to live among the people honorably and good. Do good to them. Love them. Let them see that you are different. And in that, God gets glory. Now, after last week's sermon, some of us might have that instinctive reaction to sell all, to take our lives and to find the next transport to the front lines of the mission field. Let's get our ticket. Where are we going? The 10:40 window, the Middle East. What do we got to do? You feel that reaction, and some of us need to do that, but not all of us. Not all of us need to do that. As much as the gospel is needed in every people group on this planet, the war we are in, the fight that we're fighting, is not geographical. We're not fighting for nations. We're not fighting for specific races or languages or people groups. We're fighting for people's souls. We're fighting for the hearts and the souls of the people that are in those nations. Notice what Peter says about the war. There's a war being waged against what? Your soul. There's a war being waged against the souls of our neighbors, against our coworkers, against the baristas at Starbucks, against your favorite person that works at your favorite convenience store. There's a war being waged against their souls as ours. And the way we live our lives among people here impacts that war. The things we value, the things we spend our time on, the way we spend our money, the way we speak, the way we drive, Jeremy, the way we act when we're spoken harshly to, the way we respond to harsh words spoken to us. All of these things impact that war. The way we live our lives impacts the war. As Peter puts it, those fleshly passions, they draw us away from Christ. And Peter urges us to abstain from these things, not simply for our good, but for the glory of God and the good of those among whom we live, that they would see. We live our lives in such a way here and now that God gets glory and people see that. Now, as I mentioned earlier, missions was my life. It's all I'd ever known, and uttermost bounds of the earth was what I thought God was, you know, where I thought I would be. But obviously, you see me, I'm not in some foreign land. I'm standing here before you as a pastor and a counselor here in Kingwood, Texas, here in Houston. And this journey to become a counselor and a pastor here, I want to be honest with you, is not an easy journey. I wrestled once again with, God, how does being a counselor fit with the nations? How does being a counselor fit with the uttermost bounds of the earth? And Matthew 24:14, how do I do this? And once again, I was like in that place that I was in college, just wrestling with a geographical location. And no, I'm called to people, I'm called to the nations. A counselor, that just didn't make sense. So I wrestled with that. And through prayer and through reading of the Word, I came to the realization that the darkest mission field on the planet is the human heart. There's no darker place on this earth than right here. And becoming a counselor, all that I felt God called me to do as a counselor was to take the gospel to the hearts of people in counseling ministry. And in that moment, it meshed. I'm called to the darkest places on the earth, and there's no darker place than taking the gospel to somebody's heart. The war, as Peter put it, is for the hearts and souls of people. The mission field is right here. No matter where you are on this globe, no matter what language you speak, no matter what type of house you live in or food you eat, the mission field before us every day is right here. The hearts of people. Now, when I realized that, I saw clearly. It's the gospel and the gospel alone that is the power of God unto salvation. It's the gospel and the gospel alone that transforms lives. Broken marriages, people battling with depression, unruly children, rebellious teenagers, people suffering with loss, people battling excessiveness and addictions, people whose lives look perfect on the outside, but on the inside are consumed with fear, doubt, pain, selfishness, pride, sin. All of these need the gospel. Every one of us need Jesus. No matter the state of life we're in, we need Jesus. Because Jesus is the power of God unto salvation. We're missionaries. So how do we do this? How do we live our lives in such a way that God gets glory and people are engaged with the gospel here? Cap mentioned last week that it's a worship problem. And I agree wholeheartedly with that. That because we don't truly worship and adore and love Jesus, our lives don't really reflect that by the way we engage with people. So as we turn our hearts back to God in worship, I want to look at one more way, just got one more verse here, of how we can engage. And one way that we don't truly work out, one way we don't truly worship God, that plays out in our lives, and I think here in our culture, is we kind of take a minimalistic view of our spirituality. You know, in a culture that values excess, and we value affluence, and we value getting the most bang for our buck, right? We live in that type of culture. We don't necessarily value our spirituality that much. Spiritually, we kind of seek the bare minimum. We don't usually go above and beyond. But now, if we're going to take care of our new home, or if we're going to learn how to be a good parent, or maybe do our job as best we can. We value those things. We're like, man, give me more. I want to read more books. I want to study more. I want to do the best that I can in these areas. I want to make the most of it. But when it comes to spirituality and loving Jesus, we kind of like, hey, well, what's the bare minimum here for me? You know, we ask questions like, what's the least I can do? Or, you know, pray a prayer, I can do that, yeah. Go to church, just Sunday, read a Bible occasionally, yeah, pray. Yeah, I got that, I can do that, no problem. When we ask questions about how to engage people, we kind of go the route, or at least I have before, I don't know about you, but I have before go the route of like, you know, is this really sin? You know, is this, how much alcohol really can I drink? How many cuss words can I say? You know, or what cuss words can I say? What movies really can I watch? Or should, where's the line there? You know, we ask questions like this. Like, what can I get away with and still be a Christian? It's a minimalistic view of our spirituality. Instead, we should ask questions like, does this bring glory to God? Am I honoring God with this? Does doing this or wearing this or eating or drinking this or buying this make God glorious and benefit those around me? We should ask questions like, how will this help me treasure or worship Christ more? And how will this show others that I truly do treasure Christ? I want to take a look at one more story. It's found in Luke chapter 10. Many of you may know it, be familiar with it. It's the story of the Good Samaritan. And it's this guy that he took a very minimalistic view of his spirituality and his engagement with people. And he goes to Jesus. He's a lawyer. No offense, lawyers. He's a lawyer. And he stood up and he wanted to put Jesus to the test. And he said, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And he said to him, he's kind of seeking bare minimum, right? Like, what do I have to do here? And Jesus says, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, Jesus says, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." But he, the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" And Jesus replied, goes into this cool story. "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side." Not very priestly. "So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side, too." Not very Levite-ish. "But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him, and he bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And the next day he took 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, I will repay when I come back.'" And then Jesus asked this great question. "Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" And he said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "You go and do likewise." See, this guy, he asks this question like, "All right, what can I do? What do I got to do to have eternal life?" "Oh, that? Got it. Nailed it. I'm good." And then he goes on a little further and he's like, "Oh, okay, I got that, but I just want to justify myself. I'm going to show you, Jesus, that I really got this. Who's my neighbor? I just want to see these people that I've been loving. Let's go and clarify here that that's, I got that too." And I don't know what this guy was thinking, how Jesus would respond. I don't know what he was really looking for, but I don't think it was this. I don't think this is how he thought Jesus was going to respond with this story about three guys. First of all, about a guy that goes down this road and he gets beaten up and he gets robbed and he gets left for dead. And then there's these three guys, these three characters in the story that come walking along on their journey of life. And they see this guy on the side of the road. And the first two, who would be the most, you would think would be the ones that would stop and engage with the man, they're religious, they know God, they know the law, they live their lives for the glory of God. You would think they would stop, but no, they go the other side of the road. For whatever reason, doesn't say. But yet, this one guy, the third character he introduces in this story, is the most unsuspecting, unassuming person that Jesus could have brought into the picture. He brings in the story of the Samaritan, who would be, probably, unless he was a doctor or something, would be the most unqualified person to do this. And this guy, most unsuspecting, most unqualified person, actually goes across the road and engages the man. And then Jesus goes to the guy, looks at the guy, and rather than saying, "All right, here's your neighbor," because that's what the guy wanted to know, "who's my neighbor?" He turns the question around, and he looks at the guy, and he says, "Which one of these men actually is a neighbor? Who proved to be a neighbor for that man?" And it's crazy, this guy tries to do this. He wants to know exactly who he's supposed to love. "Who? Give me the list, Jesus. Who are my neighbors? That way I can scratch them off. Okay, I look out my street. That guy, not them. That guy, he's old, he's good. Okay, not that guy. Yeah, got him. Okay, those three on my street, got him. I'm going to love those. Who's my neighbor?" No, Jesus is like, "No, which one was a neighbor? Which one lived neighborly?" See, our call to live on mission is to live neighborly lives. The Samaritan was the most unsuspecting, unqualified guy for the job, caring for that beaten man. Yet he loved him, he had compassion on him, he cared for him, and he met him in his time of need. We aren't called to take a minimalistic view of our spirituality. We aren't called to redefine who our neighbors are. But rather, we're called to be the most unsuspecting, most unqualified individuals who love people no matter who they are and no matter what state of life they're in. That's who we're called to be. The war going on is for the people around us. There are people who live across the street, who sit next to us at work, who we pass in the grocery store, who we see at the football game, or we serve on the PTA with, who need Jesus. Their lives are like that man on the side of the road. They're broken. They're robbed, they're beaten, their hearts are suffering and in pain, and they need the good news of Jesus. They're like that man on the road. And what they need from us, is to stop in the middle of our journey of life. We're going there. That's where we're going. We got that. We need to stop, look around, and engage. Although we may not be trained, we may not be skilled, we may even be seen as their enemies at times, but we carry within us the healing and restorative power of the gospel. They need us to take time out of our busy lives and engage them and be a neighbor to them. 2 Corinthians 4, 6 and 7 says, "For God who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us." It doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter your training. It doesn't matter your skills or if you have a bachelor's degree in missions. If the light of the glory of God has shone in your heart, you are a disciple of Jesus, you're a missionary, and you're called to make disciples of Jesus, here and now. Though you may simply be an earthen vessel, a jar of clay, you're not very assuming. You don't look very good on the shelf. You may be fragile. You may be able to break very easily. But yet you carry within you the greatest news the world has ever known. You carry within you the greatest treasure the world has ever known. His name's Jesus. You carry Him within you. That earthen vessel, that jar of clay lives, dwells inside of us. And when that treasure is shared with those around us, when we engage with the people among whom we live with this truth, God's glorified and they're benefited. Seek the welfare of the city in which you live. God's glorified. They're benefited. Let's not be a people who take a minimalistic view of our spirituality and our engagement with people. Let's look to God in all things. Let's seek God in all things. God isn't looking for men and women who are half-hearted in the pursuit of Him. Jesus didn't pay the ultimate price to purchase a people for Himself who seek to justify themselves before Him. Justify their religious actions before Him. Or ask questions about the bare minimum of how they can live their lives. Because reality check, the bare minimum we're called to is every ounce of our life. Everything we are laid at the foot of Christ. The foot of the cross. That's the bare minimum. Take up your cross. Follow me. I want to read a couple quotes real quick. And these are quotes from some of the most popular missionaries, not most popular, most well-known missionaries throughout history. And I just want to, these are missionaries, people that have had an impact, their lives, the glory of God in the nations where they were. God moved through these people. And I want to just read a few quotes from these people to kind of frame up where their hearts were in all of this. And their call to missions. First one's Jim Elliot. He was a missionary to the Aka Indians down in Ecuador. And he prayed, God, light these idle sticks of my life, and may I burn for you. Consume my life, my God, for it is yours. I seek not a long life, but a full one, like you, Lord Jesus. Amy Carmichael, she was a missionary in India and served orphans there. She wrote this, God, hold us to that which drew us first, when the cross was the attraction and we wanted nothing else. David Brainerd, who's a missionary to the Native Americans, profound influence on Jonathan Edwards, he wrote this, it is sweet to be nothing and less than nothing, that Christ may be all in all. Oh, that I would spend every moment of my life for God's glory. Popular missionary you know, his name's the Apostle Paul. Galatians 2:20 says, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the greatest missionary the world has ever known, his name was Jesus. He said this in John 4:34. My food is to do the will of Him who sent me and to accomplish His work. God is looking for people who would shatter their jars of clay upon the rock and let that glory and that treasure inside shine forth. We're earthen vessels. We're jars of clay. And our call is to lay ourselves, to throw ourselves upon the rock who is Christ and let that treasure within be revealed to those around us, to our family members, to our neighbors, to our co-workers, to those that God brings across our path by His grace daily. May we look to the ripe harvest fields around us here, engage with people here. May we be missionaries here. May we live our lives sent by God to declare the wonderful news of Christ, both here and to the ends of the earth. Y'all pray with me.